Hello and welcome to Fact Off, the annual podcast where we teach each other poorly researched facts that we found on the internet. My name's Liam.
My name's Ted. And this is History 2. Fact Off! Alright, it's been a while.
Yeah, how's it going?
I'm alright. We make it sound like we haven't spoken since the last one. We said that we were going to do a podcast at New Year's, didn't we? At Christmas, we put it on the Facebook.
Yeah.
We did that.
Yeah.
But then, do you want to explain what happened?
I'll let you do it.
Liam forgot to save the file.
Yeah.
So we lost it all.
Yeah.
And we couldn't be bothered doing it again.
Yeah.
So we're back now. Mm-hmm. It's Easter.
Just before we carry on, I just point out that Ted's obviously a bit annoyed at me for that, because I could tell the tone of his voice, and you may not have picked up on it, but he's obviously...
They also can't see the fact that I'm holding a knife to your throat.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to do another one for Easter, because, you know, we're back together again, the lads.
Sure, sure.
And we were discussing what topic to do, and I suggested holidays, like... celebrations and things. Yeah. Liam shot that down.
I thought it was pathetic.
He torpedoed it. Commander Winston.
I thought it was the worst thing that I've ever heard.
And Liam suggested...
I suggested history, because we've done history before, but it's quite a rich subject.
There's a lot of history.
There's a lot of history.
Since,
that's why people say there's a lot of history.
Since
sometimes.
We did that podcast, our lives, that is now history.
Oh my God.
So there's been history made since we did the history
New
podcast.
History.
Think about that.
New history.
So we've decided to do history again. I quite enjoyed doing the history one the first time.
That's, I thought we'd go back to it.
So we hope that you do.
Yeah. thank you for anyone who downloaded this. You're very loyal to come back.
Yeah,
you're
a
long
loyal
time. Has it been over a year?
Spaniel.
Has it been over a year? So
yeah, it was last time we met. I gave you a naked photo of me.
So that happened. I mean, you missed out on some great stuff in the one that got lost.
I know.
That was great.
Oh, remember that?
Oh,
remember that thing that you
with
said?
With the two things.
Yeah.
There?
Oh,
yeah.
God.
But it was a bit crazy. So, without further ado, let's start with history.
Two. Okay, so we've decided that I'm going to go first.
Okay.
We didn't toss a coin, we span a phone. But it landed on me, so
that's
I'm going
to
go first.
The 21st century for you.
Yeah, God, it's 2013. Yeah. No one uses coins anymore. No. Flip a credit card.
Yeah.
So, the first thing I'd like to tell you about, Liam,
okay,
is about a Japanese soldier who continued fighting World War II for 29 years because he didn't realise it had ended.
Sure.
Okay. His name was Hiro Onoda, and he was 20 when he first joined the army.
Mm-hmm.
And he trained as an intelligence officer. He was trained in gathering intelligence, obviously, and guerrilla warfare tactics. Mm-hmm. And when he graduated through the army, they sent him to Lubang Island in the Philippines,
okay,
which was, at that moment, it was held by the Japanese. And his orders from his major, who was called Yoshimi Taniguchi,
cool name,
said, these were his orders to him. You are absolutely forbidden to die by your own hand. It may take 3 years, it may take five, but whatever happens, we'll come back for you. You can see where this is going. Until then, so long as you have one soldier, you are to continue to lead him. You may have to live on coconuts. If that's the case, live on coconuts. Under no circumstance are you to give up your life voluntarily. Okay, wow. So those are his orders. He's got to stay there. Okay, so when he got there to Lubang Island, it was December 1944, already quite close to the end of the war.
Mm-hmm.
He got there. He joined up with the Japanese soldiers that were already there. But by February 1945, Allied soldiers had landed. They took the island, and the Japanese soldiers that survived broke off into small groups of about three or four and ran off into the jungle to try and hide and sort of use guerrilla warfare and try and keep the war effort going.
Yeah.
And Onoda was in one of these groups. With him was Yuichi Akatsu, Soichi Shimada, and Kinshichi Kazuka. Right?
Yeah.
They stayed alive by preserving food and ammunition and using guerrilla tactics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were trained for this and it was what they were good at. In October 1945, after the war had ended and these groups didn't know, one of the groups killed a cow that was one of the local farmers on one of the local farmers' farms.
See, that's not...
And the local villagers, they got sick of these Japanese soldiers who were hiding in the woods thinking that the war was still on.
Yeah.
So they leafleted the jungle. They dropped leaflets from a plane saying, the war ended on August 15th. Come down from the mountains.
Yeah.
Okay.
So can I have a guess what's going to happen next?
Go on.
They just didn't. They thought it was propaganda.
Yeah, they thought it was propaganda. Yeah. They thought it was a trick and they said, no, we're not falling for that. Because they didn't believe that the war could have ended so soon after they got there. They thought that there's no way Japan would lose the war. And obviously they had no knowledge of the atomic bombs or anything like that. They didn't know anything about this. It was before the internet. And so eventually...
Well, I don't think it was before. I think the internet was a bit basic back then.
Yeah, it was just like dial-up.
Yeah, he just had really slow pictures of pin-up girls.
and Hitler.
Yeah.
So near the end of the same year... the villagers were pissed off again for being shot at by these guys who thought that they were soldiers. And they dropped another set of leaflets, a heavy leafleting campaign by these local villagers.
Yeah.
They were like MPs. And on these leaflets, they had the order to surrender from General Yamashita, the actual copy of the document that was signed, order to surrender. The few groups that were still left still thought that this was a trick. Okay, so they ignored that again. They even had newspapers dropped on them, Japanese newspapers that they just thought were fake, letters from...
But these mountains are just a tip.
I know. Photographs, letters from the families, all sorts. Delegates from Japan went there with loudspeakers in the jungle. They ignored that. They thought it was a trick. They even sent Japanese soldiers to them to say, look, it's finished, it's over. And they thought that they were prisoners who'd been tricked into doing it. Yeah. So... Even when these Japanese soldiers never saw any Allied troops and they just saw civilians, they thought that it was still a big trick that all the soldiers were wearing civilian clothes and had made themselves look like Pacific Islanders.
Yeah.
Or Filipino Islanders, sorry. So they still didn't believe it. After about 5 years in the jungle, one of the people in Onoda's group decided that he would surrender. He didn't tell the other three soldiers, he just left. And obviously he left, realised that the war had ended, and went home. They thought that he'd been captured, and it just made them believe even more that it was still going on. They didn't realise that he'd left and surrendered. So another 5 years later, another one of the group was killed, so there was only two left, Arman, Onada, and a fella called Kazuka. They carried on for 17 more years living in the jungle together, the two of them, raiding farms, trying to gather intelligence, storing ammunition, stealing food from the villagers and stuff like that. And then eventually, in 1972, after 27 years, Kazuka was killed during a fight with some Filipino police that he thought, again, were soldiers.
Oh, God.
The Japanese had thought that these two had died ages ago. They didn't realise he was still alive in the jungle. And finding his body made them think, Onada must still be alive as well. There was a fella who was a student, Nario Suzuki, 1974, who decided to travel the world. And one of the things that he wanted to do... One of the things he wanted to do was go to this jungle and find Onada. He wanted to do that. He actually said his list of things to do on his journey were to find Onada, a panda, and the abominable snowman. Okay. So he went to the island, went through the jungle, and found him. He succeeded in convincing him that the war had finished. He actually believed this guy for whatever reason.
I was going to say, what did he say?
So he convinced him to come home with him, but Onada refused. He wouldn't leave. Because his commanding officers had told him that he had to stay and that he couldn't leave no matter what.
Mm.
So eventually they had to go and track down his major, who'd originally given him that order in 1944, who at that point was running a bookshop. Okay, he was retired running a bookshop. He had to fly to this island, go to him personally and say to him, look, seriously, it's finished. It finished a long time ago. You need to come home. And then Onada marched out of the jungle in full uniform, which he kept for 29 years, his dress uniform, somewhere folded up in a tree or something.
Yeah.
He marched out, and then the Filipino Prime Minister pardoned him for... He'd been killing these civilians and stuff, thinking that they were soldiers. But he didn't know. He had no idea that they were just innocent people. And he pardoned him and said, it's okay, you didn't know. It's all right. We told you enough times, but fine. And then this is what Onada said about it. He said, we really lost the war. How could they have been so sloppy? So Suddenly, everything went black. A storm raged inside me. I felt like a fool for having been so tense and cautious on the way here. Worse than that, what had I been doing for all these years?
Yeah.
And eventually, he, at the age of 52 in 1975, he left the jungle and went home, surrendered his sword to the president and got his pardon, and went home to Japan after 29 years. Wow. So there you go. That was, what was his first name? Hiro Onoda, who fought World War II for 29 years because he didn't know that it had finished.
That's incredible. I bet you felt like such an idiot, though.
29 so years. So
the major who went back.
Yeah. He must have been like...
Was he the one who was told, who specifically told him to stay?
Yeah. He'd feel bad, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Because that's kind
I
of like...
I didn't mean it.
Yeah. It'd be like when that moment in Home Alone where the mum goes, Kevin! Like,
he's, like when he realises he's in his bookshop.
Hey, no!
He's in his bookshop. And he thinks, yeah. Shit, I didn't tell him to come home.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I wonder if he had any coconuts.
Yeah. Probably loads.
Probably sick of them. Probably. Don't offer him a bounty. He does not want
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Probably like hates.
Sick of him.
Hates pina coladas.
So, yeah, that was Hiro Onoda.
Yeah.
Didn't know the war had ended. I wonder if there's anyone else still out there somewhere.
Probably is
100 years old.
Yeah.
In the desert.
That'd be rubbish.
Yeah, you're right.
It would be rubbish. I wouldn't like that.
You wouldn't like being in the desert?
That's my point.
Okay.
So deal
is that
with
what you're taking from this?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wouldn't like that.
Oh yeah, those are some sexy facts.
Okay. So my fact now. I want to start off with quite a short one.
Okay. Yeah, that one was quite long, I apologise.
Yeah, so I'll kind of leave...
that was my longest one.
Okay. I'm not 100% sure how to pronounce this guy's name. That's the only problem.
Can I try and help?
I want to go with Georges.
Georges?
So it's like...
Gorgeous Georges?
Yeah.
Is he Greek?
G-O-R-G-I-A-S. Yeah, Greek.
G-O-R-G-I... Yeah, let's go for Georges.
Georges. Okay. So this guy, Georges, was a Greek man born in 485 BC. Right? And during his mother's funeral, the pallbearers carrying the coffin noticed a sound of crying coming from inside. They quickly broke open the coffin and found a little baby Georges knocking Ooh. About in there.
So she was...
The mother had died in childbirth and they thought that the child had died.
Oh, God.
He died in the womb, but he's five and decided that that was the moment he wanted to pop out. During the funeral.
Well,
so it, obviously it was quite soon, but it wasn't.
It's a good time
it
to pop out.
It was like a day later.
Oh my God.
So yeah, and he went on to become a philosopher, which you can kind of understand when you kind of
when you when your birth is that messed up.
Yeah.
You can either become a philosopher.
Yeah.
Some sort of artist.
Yeah.
Or a politician.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
But so Gorgeous Georges
yeah.
was born in a coffin.
Born in a coffin. Of his mother's coffin. Mother. Yeah. And apparently it's not the only time this has happened where they thought someone had died and the child had died but he was in fact alive. There's been lots of times where it's happened as part of the post mortem even. It's happened as part of the post mortem.
Oh God, and they cut him open.
Yeah. And the baby was alive.
Oh.
Where it's just been that this is before modern technology. Where, course,
before the internet.
Before the internet. From modern technology where it was easier, it was more difficult to tell. But as part of the post-mortem, they find out. There's the odd situation like that, but never has it happened with the exception of this one person, seemingly anyway.
Where on record.
During the funeral, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. What a mess. It's almost like a
That's so, horror film. It's so goth. That is so goth, isn't it?
It really is like something from a horror film. But yeah, so that's it.
That oh, the Twilight Zone or something.
Yeah.
That's
my first fact.
Gorgeous Georges.
Yeah. So in that round you had Gorgeous Georges.
And what? Nah.
Round two. Okay, so round two. Hit me.
Oh, didn't actually hit him then.
I hate you.
Okay, imagine this scenario, okay? Me and you. Playing cards in an Old West saloon.
Not the first time that's happened then.
You've got your cowboy hat on.
Sure.
You've got your revolver on your hip. You've got a prostitute on your knee.
Sure.
She's cheap. I reach to get my drink or something.
Okay.
And cards fall out of my sleeve.
Yeah.
What happens next?
You get shot.
I get shot.
Well, when you go in to have a gunslinging match.
Okay. Now you've fallen into my trap.
It's like QI.
It's the classic thing, isn't it?
It's exactly like QI.
You would accuse me of cheating. We'd go outside. We'd have a sort of a standoff. Yeah,
Mexican standoff.
Not a Mexican standoff because there's only two of us.
Oh, so it was a Mexican standoff more than one?
A Mexican standoff's three people. Like at the end of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
I just assume the Mexican standoff is just...
No.
What is that then? There was a term
It's when
for
you've
that.
Got three people.
No, but when you've got two people. What
just
is
a standoff.
That? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
An American standoff. Yeah, of course it is.
All right.
And then we would draw.
Yeah.
The first one to shoot, obviously, would win. And then they go back into the bar and carry on playing cards. That was the way of the Wild West.
Mm.
Actually, no.
Okay.
That never happened.
Right.
Ever.
Oh, so ever?
It never happened in the Wild West. Right. The reason being, guns just weren't good enough.
Oh, really? Like
they weren't accurate enough. Mm. So you could shoot six shots at me, and chances are you probably wouldn't hit me.
But they had rifles by then, which
they
would
did
be more precise.
They would, yeah. But you wouldn't have done a duel with a rifle.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
They never would have had a standoff like that—a quick draw standoff. It never happened. It's just an invention for films. To have an exciting scene. When you think about the Old West and you think about like how brutal it is and all these people getting shot and like a standoff like that would happen every day.
Yeah.
The bloodiest sort of like gunslinger, most notorious town in the Old West. Mm-hmm. How many murders do you think they had in a year? What's the most they ever had in a year?
Before you said that.
Before I said that.
I would have thought it would be quite a lot. Because, just simply because, that's just how it's portrayed.
Yeah.
But then, I also do kind of know that there's loads of myth and kind of rumour that goes around as a result, like, from the Old West, that is just from films.
Yeah.
A lot of it comes from films, very little of it that comes...
Should I tell you the most number of murders that any Old West town ever had in a year?
Go on.
Five.
Really?
Yeah. and that was high, obviously. The average was about one murder a year. And mostly wasn't from guns either. Mm. It was usually like a knife or just a fist fight or someone getting bottled.
Yeah.
Because guns were rubbish. I just couldn't shoot anyone. If two people were to have a duel...
So was it like loads of attempted murders that they kept on making?
Probably, yeah. Loads of bullets were getting sold.
Yeah.
If we were going to have a duel, what we would do is actually we would just stand opposite each other, stand sort of like side on to each other so that you were a smaller target. And just taking turns having a shot at each other until eventually you hit the other person. That's how old duels were done.
Really?
That's how they were done. They weren't a quick draw duel because even if you drew first, chances are you could fire off six shots at each other, both of you, and no one would hit anyone. That whole thing of like shooting a bullet and cocking the hammer back and shooting one again really fast, it just didn't do it. It's just for films.
Yeah.
And so even famous gunslingers like Billy the Kid, obviously like really notorious, really famous. According to sources that aren't Billy the Kid, his actual kill count was four people.
Yeah.
But the reason why these outlaws would lie and say they'd shot hundreds of people was just to try and big themselves up and to try and like promote themselves a bit more and give themselves a bit of a name.
Yeah.
When actually they weren't that dangerous.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there you go. The Wild West is actually not as dangerous as Back to the Future Part 3 would have you think.
I've been watching Back to the Future recently.
Really? It's good, isn't it?
So good. Right, I'm going to cut this out.
don't leave it.
I got it on Blu-ray for tenner for the trilogy.
Where from?
It looks from Zavi.
Well, I imagine Zavi will want to send us some 3D videos.
And not only that, I found it was really good delivery, really quick, well packaged.
Well packaged, yeah.
Oh, facts. So,
okay then, Liam. Educate me.
Okay, so I want to talk to you about something that I actually found out about a while ago, about a few months ago. And I just thought it was really interesting. And so I thought I'd tell you the story.
You've saved it all this time.
I actually have. Like, I kind of did think.
You could have told me about this.
And I don't know. I may have actually already done it.
Right, okay.
So that is something that is concerning.
So you're about to hear my best acting surprise.
Yeah, let's pretend that you've
never heard it. Should we
practice? What I want to tell you about is the history of the Tor Rider.
The?
Tor Rider.
Okay, you've not told me this.
Okay. So you know what a rider is, don't you?
A rider?
Yeah, on a tour. So basically, I don't know. I don't even know if you're acting anymore.
I know. I'm not acting. Okay, I've got no idea what a tall rider is.
So a rider, this is mainly with concerts, gigs.
A tall rider. Yeah. I was imagining someone riding some mythical beast called a tall riding.
Right.
Not... Yeah, I know what a tall rider is.
So you know
they sort out with supper bands and they get the food and the puppies and the women.
And the and so there's a lot of ridiculous riders that go about.
Yeah.
But what I found quite interesting is how the rider came about originally. What it was Van Halen, popular beat group. I don't really know what I was saying there.
Another Back to the Future reference.
When Van Halen in it?
In their headphones.
Yeah, he does. Okay, so I want to tell you about the history of the rider.
Okay.
So for anyone who doesn't know, a rider is when, before a concert at a particular venue, they would send out a rider, which is normally mainly a series of safety checks, things that cover insurance. But most famously, and what people talk about the most, would be the artist demands.
Yeah, there's a few famous ones. There's some divas.
The really famous ones of divas who rats for ridiculous things.
Did Mariah Carey ask for like 20 puppies or something?
Yeah.
She loves the taste of them.
Yeah. And she drinks their blood.
She can get through five in an hour.
Yeah. So
it's that. It's the list of demands that a band would have.
It's a list of demands that a band would have.
Wasn't the Ozzy Osbourne one that he wanted all the brown M&Ms taken out?
Well, it's actually, that's Van Halen.
Oh, that was Van Halen.
So Van Halen, kind of credited to be the first band to ever do it, to ever come up with the idea of a rider. And it's actually quite clever what they did. It became as a result of a technical failure on behalf of the venue, who haven't completed all the insurance, firstly, and haven't completed all the safety checks, which are necessary. Everything had to be supported on the stage. Everything,
and they hadn't lighting rig
hadn't done it.
Right.
And so what happened is one of their roadies died. He got killed by some fallen equipment because the safety checks hadn't been covered, and also the insurance hadn't been covered. It's not the responsibility of the tour promoter or the manager.
It's the venue.
It's the venue has to take care of insurance because obviously they're mainly in charge.
Yeah.
And so they, because this person died, they were upset about it, and they think, well, how can we know that the safety checks are going to
be done? The band, this is.
This is the band. This is, it's actually, apparently David Lee Roth himself, like, actually is credited to have come up with it himself. So what he suggested was they request that a bowl of M&Ms be in the dressing room ready for them, with all the brown ones taken out. And the reason why it's such a ridiculous thing is that if they get to the dressing room and all the brown M&Ms are still in there, or there just isn't any M&Ms, and they know that they should look into whether the event's insured. And if they haven't done, even the rider, they actually don't have to play the gig.
So they made it something ridiculous so that if the venue did that ridiculous thing, chances are they've probably done all the other safety checks and stuff.
Yeah, they've done every single safety check.
I don't think that's why Mariah Carey did it, though. I think she did it because she's
probably
a bit of
but I think it's a thing that every single band these days do, no matter what the band is, like how big they are. The odd exception of like really small bands, but they will always do it because it's good practice. It's good practice to have to be careful to make sure that there's nothing go wrong. So yeah, some of them are ridiculous.
Yeah,
but that double check to make sure that they're going to be doing all the things. I don't think those kind of things happen anymore anyway.
Yeah, they mustn't surely like because these inspectors and stuff.
Yeah,
surely.
These days they have to be really careful about it. But if it's not insured, then the band loses out and the people involved lose out. David Lee Roth said about this in his autobiography, and he added that one venue he found brown M&Ms, and management's failure to read weight requirements in the rider resulted in the band's equipment sinking to the floor, and it caused $80,000 of damage, and they weren't insured against
it. They hadn't done the M&Ms, they hadn't so done that kind of justified the whole thing.
Yeah, so to kind of prove, this is the same band who someone had died as a result of someone not doing the jet. So that's where it comes from. That's history of where it comes from. And that's why everybody, even comedians, it doesn't matter whether you're in a band or anything, anyone who's doing those events, they have to be really careful because they can lose out.
My question for you is, what would your request be?
My request?
Yeah.
That's weird that. My flatmate asked me this the other day.
What did you answer?
I can't remember what I said in the end.
I'll tell you now what Liam's is going to be. It's going to be something involving kittens or cats.
It totally would.
He totally loves would. Cats.
I just like one kitten.
Just one kitten. What colour? Would you request a colour?
Probably like tabby. Like
one tabby kitten.
Yeah, just kind of. Or those Bengal ones, they're amazing.
Oh, I like them.
Imagine that.
A Bengal kitten. Not a Bengal tiger.
Be good. And if I was playing a big gig, you know, I'm playing Wembley Stadium. Because, you know, I'm a big hit.
You'd request two of them?
No. And make them fight to the death. No, that was imagine that, like, if you became ready, you get into the zone to play a gig, biggest gig of your life. Stare at his cat for, like, half an hour. And eventually...
It just shits on the floor.
You just saw it, just looking at it. Yeah. Be great.
Yeah, so you'd request a,
to prefer,
a rare
that probably
kitten.
Would be it.
Yeah, it definitely
would. It would be a kitten.
Mine wouldn't be a kitten.
Twiglets as well.
And Twiglets.
Twiglets. Fuck a load of Twiglets.
Is that what it'd say on the rider?
A bath load of Twiglets. Yeah.
No women or anything?
Ooh, Twiglets and cats. That's all I need. Yeah. Yeah, so what I've got here is I've got some artists. And I've got what their riders are.
Is it true or false?
No, no.
Okay.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say the name of the artist, and you've got to try and guess what they are. Or what
guess
kind
what
of thing.
The rider
guess
is.
Guess what kind of thing it would be.
Right,
I'll give
okay.
you some leeway. Okay?
Okay.
So let's start off with Axl Rose.
Axl Rose. He would request a bath full of yogurt with two women already in it when he gets there.
No, it's one square melon.
God.
Okay, Motley Crue.
Oh, God. Women, drugs, and a pig.
You're not that far off. Okay, basically what it was everything you could think of.
So,
cigarettes, drugs.
Drugs, women.
In fact, I doubt it was drugs.
Porn.
I doubt it was drugs and I doubt it was alcohol, but everything else that you could think of. And the reason why was notable items include a submachine gun... A detailed schedule of local AA meetings and a 12-foot boa constrictor. Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. A submachine gun?
Yeah. Marilyn Manson.
I imagine his would be something quite refined again.
He really isn't.
Really? Because he's quite an intelligent kind of guy.
I think, I seriously doubt this happened, but this is what he's on. These are all, by the way, I should point out, all of these riders are available through various websites. One that I was looking at was called the Smoking Gun. Might have been there before.
Smoking Gun.
It's quite good. But it has all the riders from different bands.
Oh,
like
okay.
Proper print-ups.
Marilyn Manson.
And they're amazing. They're really, really brilliant.
Something like is there some sort of animal? A goat?
No.
Is it...
I'll be honest with you, you're not going to get
go
this
on,
one.
Go on.
Marilyn Manson's was the dressing room had to be absolutely as cold as possible. Inside the room had to be a bald headed toothless hooker and Haribo gummy bears.
Because she can't chew them.
Yeah. and they had to be Haribo. That's Monkeys is a novelty yo-yo, boxes of Special K and Crunchy Nut Cornflakes, and a novel of the venue's choice.
A novel of the venue's choice.
Yeah, that was great.
Just one? Are they going to sit around and read it together?
Yeah. Led Zeppelin's is an ironing board and an iron. Madonna's is brand new toilet seats.
So in that round, you had the Not Very Wild West.
And Axl Rose likes square melons.
Melons. You don't need to be a drunk. So my third fact for you comes from Japan again, and it's about self-mummification.
What?
Okay. There's these monks called Shugendo monks, okay, and as their ultimate form of meditation and trying to achieve enlightenment, it was a form of Buddhism that they practiced.
Okay.
What they would do is they would mummify themselves whilst they were still alive.
Right.
Okay. What they would do, it would take about 9 years for them to do it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
For the process, and this is a long word, so I'm going to try and read it out. The process was called Shokoshumbutsu.
Okay.
Okay? And it was like the ultimate thing that they could do. If they successfully did it, they believed that they would totally achieve enlightenment and become a Buddha in death,
mm-hmm.
okay? The way that they would do it is for 6 years, they would gradually begin to stop eating. They would only just eat nuts and seeds. Some accounts say that they could also eat fruits and berries, but mostly it was nuts and seeds. They would do heavy amounts of exercise to try and sort of like burn off any fat and any calories or anything that they had. And they would do that for the first 1,000 days, which is, about 3 years? And then during the next 3 years, they would further restrict their diet and only eat bark and roots. Bark and roots. And then by the near the end of that sort of 3 years, they would drink regular drafts of this drink, which was made from the sap of the Yarushi tree, okay? Mm-hmm. And the sap is mildly poisonous, and it's used as a lacquer to preserve wood and things like that.
Oh, really?
And they would drink this stuff, and they would vomit a lot. It would drop their body weight. It stopped them from gaining nutrients from what they eat. So you can imagine them getting really skinny, really sort of like bony.
Vomiting is bad enough, but vomiting up bark.
I know. and so they would obviously like lose body fluids and all sorts from vomiting and things. Then in the final stage of this self-mummification, they'd be literally just skin and bones, just nothing on them. At that point, if they were still alive, the monk would lock himself in a stone tomb, okay, with just large enough for him to fit in, sitting in the lotus position with his legs crossed. And he would sit there, they would seal him in, and they would have an air tube from inside the tomb going up, out of the tube so that he could carry on breathing. So he didn't die of suffocation. He would carry on breathing. They would also have a bell in there that he would ring every day so that the monks outside know that he's still alive in there. And then eventually, when he would eventually die and the bell would stop ringing, they would seal up the air tube, and then he would become entombed in there, and then they'd stay sitting there meditating until they died. Then once the monk died and they didn't ring the bell each day, they would... they'd wait another 1,000 days. They'd take the air tube out. The other monks, this is the ones who are still alive, wait another 1,000 days, and then eventually they would open up the tomb to see if the monk was successfully mummified. And if he was, then they believed that he had achieved total enlightenment and become a Buddha, and he would be worshipped like he was part of the Buddha's sort of spirit. Most of the time they didn't successfully mummify themselves and they would just die. And this practice continued until the 19th century,
really?
When it was outlawed by the Japanese government. It also found out that when they were successfully mummified, their mummified body would be put on display in the temple. So they'd have a display of all these mummified monks who'd managed to mummify themselves whilst alive.
That's pretty incredible.
That's pretty mental, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that before.
No, me neither.
Before I found that out.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
What they went through. And there you go. Not particularly funny, but
I mean,
I found that genuinely really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I tried to bring some humour out of it with the whole bark stuff, but tough crowd.
Tough crowd.
Yeah, but that is pretty incredible.
So, yeah, they'd... God, you'd be...
It's times like this, I'm glad I'm atheist, really. I don't have to do stuff like that.
Yeah. The thing is, though,
I mean,
like,
sure, I bet enlightenment's fantastic. But...
You've not got much to lose because you don't know if you're successful or not until you're already dead.
Yeah.
So there's no feeling of disappointment. As far as you're concerned, you've done your best.
Yeah. That's all you can do.
Yeah.
Really?
And that's the message to take away from this podcast.
Facts.
What I'm going to talk to you about is cat worship in ancient Egypt.
Full circle. Yeah. Told you liked cats.
So as you probably know...
You still worship cats.
I do, but then the internet does. So the internet's become...
Cats.
We love cats now.
Cats Everyone are loves awesome. Cats. It's cool to like cats now.
It is.
Cool to hip.
It is. But it's not really just hip. They are quite funny. And I think let's take it into account that often cats, walking around aren't particularly funny. They don't do anything particularly funny. Whereas dogs are all happy and whatnot.
Yeah.
Cats aren't particularly funny. So if someone takes a video of a cat doing something stupid when they're trying to look all serious, it makes it so much funnier.
Cats are funny because they take themselves very seriously.
Yeah, that's why it's funny. Whereas dogs, if your dog does something stupid, it's like you're trying to be stupid. It's like it's asking for the joke.
Trying too hard.
Yeah.
Like James Corden.
Yeah. I'm going to bring him up. Yeah. So anyway, so I want to talk to you about cat worship in ancient Egypt.
I imagine, like, because they catch mice and stuff, they were probably quite well respected.
Yeah, well, that was the main reason why. Yeah. The main reason was because he could hunt rats and snakes.
Snakes? That's bad.
It's mental. But so they became known as a symbol of grace as well, as motherhood as well. And the Egyptian goddess Bast was in the form of a cat.
Bast?
Yeah. The penalty for intentionally harming or killing a cat was the death sentence.
Oh.
And during any kind of domestic fire, men from the community would line up around the fire to prevent any cats from running into it.
Why were cats running into a fire?
Because they're idiots. No.
And no one was around to film it then either.
Yeah. A Greek historian describes an interesting example of swift justice imposed upon the killer of a cat about 60 BC. He witnessed the chariot of a Roman soldier accidentally run over an Egyptian cat. An outraged mob gathered and, despite pleas from the pharaoh, killed the soldier in the street.
Oh, my God.
So revered was the cat that they sometimes received the same mummification process that humans did. In a book, The Cult of the Cat, Patricia Dale Green states that the cat's body was placed in a linen sheet and carried amidst bitter lamentations by the bereaved to a sacred house where they were treated with drugs and spices by an embalmer. She goes on to state that although the cat of an Egyptian noble would receive more extravagant burial status, the body of a worker's cat would still be carefully prepared with an embalming carried out with the same consciousness as for a human body, often with provisions for afterlife such as pots of milk and even mummified mice.
Well, a mummified cat needs mummified mice.
Yeah, exactly. And this is what I thought was bonkers. Also, the Greek historian Herodotus wrote that when a cat died, the household would go into mourning, as if for a human relative.
Oh, God.
And would shave their eyebrows to signify their loss. After the eyebrows fully grew back to the state that they were when they first started, the mourning period was said to be over.
So they timed the mourning period on
every member of the family would shave their eyebrows off. And it works in two different ways. It didn't just work as a way of knowing when to stop mourning, but it was given as a sign. So like when they'd grown back, you knew it was time to move on. Because they were so lovely, these animals.
So if they were still upset, you could say, oh, come on, your eyebrows are growing back now. For Christ's sake, get over it.
Yeah. Also, I think it was a way of other people seeing that you're in a mourning period.
And leaving you alone.
So people would be like, oh.
Don't be such a pussy. Oh.
Yeah, so it was seen as being that it was like an emotional thing. And people would understand that if you'd lost a cat, you would be upset. And it wasn't seen as like, people wouldn't treat you, and they were so amazed. These creatures are massive, too. They're like the most incredible.
If you
creatures.
Had a cat and it died, Liam, you'd shave your eyebrows off. You'd shave your head. You'd mummify yourself and sit in there with it. Yeah. That's what you'd do.
I'd just come home one day, and mum will go, "Cat's dead," and I'll go, "I'm going to mummify myself."
I'll just walk. I'll be in my room for 6 years. Give me some bark.
Yeah. But yeah, so
that
was my fact. Just that, mainly, that people would shave their eyebrows off to signify that they were mourning the death of their cat.
Aww.
So, in the final round, you had cat mummification.
And self-mummification. That was our attempt at History 2, the sequel.
Yeah. I think we stuck within the realms of history quite nicely.
History 2. Hysteria.
Yeah, I think we did okay. That was quite historical.
Yeah, that's some interesting things.
Yeah.
I hope that people think that was worth a year and a half long wait.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure they've been waiting with bated breath.
What does that mean?
Just I don't know. No idea.
I don't know what bated means.
It just means waiting. Like,
is it?
Yeah, it's like, well, baited breath means like tense.
Yeah, but what does baited mean?
Baited.
It's spelled B-A-T-E-D, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm assuming he just means...
If
like,
you know, send us a tweet or a Facebook message and tell us what baiting means. We could just Google it, but...
Can't be asked.
Audience interaction.
Sure. Yeah, so voting. Are we still going to do the bother with the voting? We're not going to do another one?
Probably not.
No. We could vote.
You could,
we could just do it and then...
Just let us know.
Yeah.
Who you think
do you have a favourite? Why not email us? At factoffpodcast@gmail.com.
All the G's. factoff-interwebs.geocities.tk.
Or why not tweet us your interesting facts about history?
Hashtag factoff.
And we won't do anything with them.
We'll read them and go,
We'll read them probably a few months later.
Yeah.
And then go, oh yeah, we did that podcast one time.
Factoffpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And on Facebook, it's just search for Fact Off.
Search Fact Off or tweet us on...
Tell your friends about it.
Yeah. I think we're under Fact Off Podcast on Twitter, aren't we?
Fact Off. I think so, yeah. At Fact Off Podcast.
Yeah. So feel free to get in touch if you want to tell us anything.
Tell us
what's been going on in your life.
If you don't, then don't get in touch. Yeah. You don't have to.
You might have an interesting fact about you.
That we don't want to know.
That we don't want to know about something like...
What's your favourite type of cat?
Yeah.
What would your last words be?
What would your rider be?
Yeah. Send us any answers to any of those questions.
Do you like brown M&Ms? Sorry.
Have you ever mummified yourself?
Send us a picture of you mummified.
Hope you've enjoyed it, and it was fun to do this again.
Yeah, it's like old times.
If you've got any ideas for anything that we could do in the future, any topics, then let us know those as well, and we'll see if we can do them in the next school holidays.
Yeah. So probably next time will be summer.
Yeah, summer. We'll do a summer one.
Yeah.
History 3.
Bye-bye. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you again. You're looking well.
You too.
Not you. The listeners are looking well.
No, I was in you two to the listeners as well.
Okay.
Because I was expecting them. Yeah. Let's just wrap this up.
Okay. So thanks for listening, and get in touch if you want to, and we'll see you next year.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Fact Off. To vote, go to factoffpodcast.co.uk, email us at factoffpodcast@gmail.com, or contact us via Facebook or Twitter.
Hello and welcome to Fact Off.
You always get
over-enthusiastic.
Hi there, welcome to Fact Off.
Hello, welcome to Fact Off, the
you
annual
crazy,
podcast.
Crazy world. iTunes bastards.
Okay. Hello and welcome to... It's just the way I say hello.
Should I do it?
No. It's fine. Hello and welcome to Fact Off, the annual podcast where we share... We teach, doesn't it? Yeah. This is why I'm not an actor. Exactly this reason. Hello and welcome to Fact Off, the annual podcast where we... Hello and welcome to Fact Off, the annual podcast where we teach each other poorly researched facts. I'll try again. Hello and welcome to...
I need to put my tea down.
Right, okay. Hello and welcome to Fact Off, the annual podcast where we teach each other poorly researched facts that we found on the internet. I'm Liam.
Come on. What?
Just know me how we do
Why does it always start with you?
No, because whoever introduces it goes, I'm Liam, and
it's
I'm
been
Ted.
So long.
I know, God. Do you remember? This was like a classic thing. This is a groundbreaking podcast.
Shoot it again.